Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Monster Movie Media presents.
This is Corey Burton, the voice of the El Rey Network, and the Haunted Mansion Holidays, and of course Captain Hook, and many others. And you're listening to the Creepy Kingdom Podcast.
Greetings and welcome to episode 87 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast. A podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. And in this episode, we check in with filmmaker Philip Swift as we bring you up to date, or up to speed, if you haven't heard of it, about his latest project, The Dark Side of Disney documentary. So without any further ado, let's begin. Okay, I'm here with documentary film director Philip Swift. Hello.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm doing great. I've lost track to what number appearance this is you on Creepy Kingdom. It's either four or five times. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I said to my wife before I got on, she was like, good luck. And I was like, I think it's like the fifth time. So it's not like no luck even comes into play anymore. It's just like catching up with an old friend.
Yeah. True. So, but I thought it was time to bring you back on for listeners that may have heard you before, and even for new listeners. We're going to bring up to speed with everything that's going on with your current project, which is the Dark Side of Disney documentary. So real quick, in case someone that is new to all of this, how do you explain your documentary?
That's great. Actually, I had somebody yesterday email me, literally yesterday, emailed me about when I was on what was years ago now. I was on Creepy Kingdom talking about the bubble.
Oh, wow.
And this guy was like, oh, I just heard you on Creepy Kingdom. I'm so excited to see that movie. And I thought that was pretty cool. So, yes, oh, wow. I think it's a good idea to reiterate what things are about if you're just chiming into Creepy Kingdom. The Dark Side of Disney is a new documentary that is coming out this spring that is inspired by the best-selling travel guide by Leonard Kinsey. The book sort of tells you how and where to do more, we'll say, adult-themed activities at the Disney parks. You know, the book tells you where to do drugs, where to get drunk, how to have sex at the parks, things like that. And the film examines a little more of the question why. Like, why do people want to do this? Why are some Disney fans compelled to step out of the light and into the dark side? In the film, we have interviews with many. I think it's a new good way to kind of pitch it.
Yeah.
In the film, it kind of starts with an interview with my mom where we talk about scattering my grandmother's ashes in the moat around Cinderella Castle at Magic Kingdom. And then from there, I kind of say, like, there's got to be more people out there like my mom. And we meet Leonard Kinsey, the author of Dark Side of Disney. And then we go on a trip to Orlando to check in with a bunch of different Disney fans who have definitely crossed the line in their search for the true magic of the wonderful world of Disney.
Nice. And myself and Roxy, where you met us along your journey.
Yeah, you guys are some of the lighter of the dark side, to be honest. Like, Roxy, I don't think you could turn all the lights off in the world, she still would shine.
Wow, that's a quote.
And then, James, you're just such a great – you're like just such a sweetheart. That's, I think, the easiest way to put it. You're such a nice guy, and your podcast is so positive and upbeat, even though it has this sort of – you hear – I think it's the same thing with The Dark Side of Disney. Like, you hear that title, and you think, like, oh, this is going to get crazy. And you hear Creepy Kingdom, you think, like, oh, God, this is going to be so scary. But you just examine the creepy factor in the same way that, like, I'm examining this dark side. They both come from like a source of Disney love, which right. I think is important for people to understand.
Yeah, so your documentary is not there's a lot of conspiracy theories and stuff about Disney and all that, and you kind of in the beginning of the documentary say that this is not that.
That's not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I'm happy that that's there, because I've had a couple. There are two different recent reviews. One was a mention on the Film Spotting podcast that's done out of Chicago, and is actually on NPR. When they were promoting the Chicago screening we had, they said that, like, you're probably gonna. They literally, like, immediately said, you probably think this is an anti-Disney film, but really, you know, it's a very positive look. And they mentioned even that part in the beginning of the film where I say, when you think of the dark side of Disney, you might think of, and then we see this montage of, like, you know, bizarre, crazy. Racist, sexist, racist again. history that Disney has. So definitely pops up. And then actually recently we had an Akron, Ohio screening, where I'm from Akron, Ohio originally, and they always welcome me back with open arms. And we actually had a 100 and probably about 75 person screening. A lot of people came out to see it at the in Akron, and the local paper covered it and did a little review of the film, and they said the same thing. That, like, they entered the movie thinking, like, it was going to be this, like, you know, terrible attack on Disney, but at the end it's really just this almost like love letter to, like, to the youth that we've all experienced with Disney.
True. Yeah. I do want to ask you a little bit more about the screenings a little bit, but the way I describe the film is that I say it's a film about misfit adult Disney fans. You know, like, when you think of Disney fans, you have preconceived notions. When you think of adult Disney fans, you may have preconceived notions. And the people in the film are kind of misfits, you know, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. It's like, I think of an adult Disney, immediately you say adult Disney fan or Disney park fan especially. Yeah. And I think of a guy in his, you know, 30s and 40s wearing a polo shirt and khaki shorts and rolling in with his family in a minivan and spending their day taking pictures with Mickey Mouse. But which is perfectly fine. I mean, different strokes for different folks, of course. So... so the film, we look at the Disney gangs out in Disneyland. We look at the urban explorers like Hoot Gibson. We look at people that create fake IDs. People, I have to say people because the person who does that does not want their name to be publicly known.
Why not?
We look at – I don't know. We look at people who love to abuse drugs and then see concerts at Epcot.
From 70s, you know. Yacht rockers, yeah.
definitely. And podcasters like yourself. And then finally, podcasters like yourself.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
So your last appearance was actually live from the premiere of the Dark Side of Disney screening, which was held at the Frida Cinema in Santa Ana, California, this past August. And so that was the premiere screening. That was August, right? Yeah, of course, yeah. So there's been a handful of screenings since then. So why don't you bring us up to speed a little bit about the you know, you dived in a little bit, but what's it like, particularly the Orlando screening, which I personally tried to make an effort to attend, but just the stars not aligned and I didn't get there. So I would love to hear more about that as well.
So it's been great. So Anaheim it couldn't have gone better. It was amazing. We had every single person except for Hugh Gibson every person that's in the movie. It was just so I was very touched and impressed that people like, you know, Leonard and Logan, who appears in the film, came all the way from Florida and Baltimore to be there for the screening. I was really touched by that. And then it was just a super fun time. You were there. You experienced it. And then we talked afterwards. And so then based off of that, we were able to get an Orlando screening together. The Orlando screening let me take a step back. Yeah. Before that, we just oddly enough had a Chicago screening because I had been approached over the summer by a pair of filmmakers out of Chicago who were doing a short documentary called Keep Moving Forward. Mm-hmm. It is about a Vietnam veteran suffering from PTSD who goes to the Disney parks to sort of cure the symptoms he has from PTSD.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal short documentary. It's really, really well done. But they were having an issue with a Kickstarter campaign they were running for the film, and they were having some problems getting traction, so that they contacted me, and I put them in touch with people I knew at Kickstarter, and I put the word out through my the backers of my Kickstarter campaign campaigns I did for their Dark Side of Disney, and we kind of helped them out, and they met their goal, and we became friends through that process. And then coincidentally, my wife was going to a conference in Chicago. We have a new young child with us, and she said, "Hey, you and Margot, our daughter, should come with me to Chicago for this conference. And maybe you can do a screening of your film there," which worked out really well because we talked to the filmmakers of Keep Moving Forward, and we had a nice little double feature where we watched Dark Side of Disney, followed by their rough cut of their new film. And then we had a completely sold out screening. It was awesome.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, it was like this classic old movie house called the Logan Theater in Logan Square, a little suburb of Chicago. And I was just overwhelmed by how many people came out. It was just a fantastic time and really well received. I was worried about it. Like Anaheim and Orlando, I assume the film is going to be, is going to do okay because of the Disney communities there. But Chicago is so far from either of those. So it was cool to see like Middle America come out and support the film. So that was great. Cool. And that got us really excited. We were riding a wave of Anaheim and Chicago for the Orlando screening, which was held thanks to a guy named Ryan Scott at Bloody Bombshell Entertainment. He was one of the backers of the film, and he kind of took it under his wing to make sure we had a good, successful screening.
Wow, awesome.
And so I've been really lucky. Like, Chicago worked out really well because those local filmmakers really did a lot of the groundwork. Orlando worked out well because of Ryan Scott and his wife. They did just an amazing job of getting the word out and finding a good venue. It was held at a place called Gods and Monsters, which is this enormous comic and collectible shop in Orlando. It literally, when I say enormous, like whatever you're picturing, it's bigger than that. It's like so big. And they have like a Blade Runner themed bar, and they have like an alien themed like little cafe area, and they have the cash registers are actually set up to look like an Arkham Asylum dispensary.
Wow.
It was insane. So this was a great screening, very similar to the Anaheim one. We had everybody there except for actually you and Roxy were the only people who didn't make it to that one. Before the screening, we had a little Disney Dark Side of Disney costume contest, which was entertaining. We had about 10 people come out, and the guy that won it was a guy that just was dressed like Walt Disney. That was his costume.
What were some of the other costumes?
I'm trying to think. There was a woman dressed like the Cheshire Cat. There was a woman dressed like one of the wood nymphs from Fantasia, which I thought was a kind of a cool deep cut. Yeah, it was cool. I'd have to look through the pictures to refresh my memory of all of them. there was like a naughty, like haunted mansion, you know, lady. She was dressed like, had like basically a ride uniform on.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of female contestants in the contest. But in the end, yeah, the dude who dressed up like Walt Disney and did not break character the entire night was the one. Yeah, like you had to give him credit because he was like full in character, full Walt Disney. It was great. And what was cool about that is that Hoot Gibson, if your listeners don't know who he is, shame on you, listeners. He is – this amazing, I would say in the film, I call him a celebrity of the Disney community, Disney fringe community. He's just spent the last 30 years jumping off rides at the parks and filming behind the scenes. And I think the internet has a lot. The internet, the corner of the internet that loves and remembers Horizons, the ride at Epcot so well, I think have a lot to thank Hoot and his partner in crime Chief for, because they think they did a great job of documenting a lot of that stuff for posterity's sake. But anyways, Hoot Gibson, speaking of Horizons, brought an actual prop from the ride. They were these little vegetables basically that grew in the desert hydroponic garden. And he had just kind of put them in a little like shadow box. And that was like the first place prize that went to the costume contest winner. Oh. So that was really cool. Yeah, it was very, very cool. We had the screening, which was great. Leonard Kinsey, the author of the book, at one point leaned over towards me during the screening and said this. He said the Anaheim screening was fun, but that wasn't – this film isn't about Anaheim. It's not about right. Disneyland, even though we touch on the gangs and everything. The film is really about Disney World, and that's what the book is about. That's what the film is definitely about. He said this is the home for this film. And then we kind of sat back and watched the audience react in a totally different way. It was like watching like old home movies with your family or something, because they would see something from some of the archival footage, or they would you know, listen to a story someone told in the film, and they would laugh when they were supposed to laugh exactly, and they would nod their heads. And it was pretty exciting, a little different vibe than the Anaheim screening was.
Wow! Yeah, I mean, of course, I'd like to go to all screenings, and if there's a budget for that, I'll go. But you know, that was what I really wanted to go to, because, you know, just like the Anaheim one, I mean, being a part of, you know, the Orlando one, just being immersed, you know, and around, you know, the local Disney community, and of course, the people are gonna, if they're gonna travel to go to a screening, of course, they want to travel, you know, close to the park so they can go there as well.
Yeah.
So, but, and plus that place sounds really cool. It sounds like a cool place to check out next time you're in Orlando. I guess free plug for them, but.
Take a day off of Disney and go check out Gods and Monsters.
A day?
It's fantastic.
Come on.
Okay, take the morning. Get up early in the morning. Go get a waffle and go check it out. It's great.
All right, cool. So, then you had the Ohio one after that, right?
Yeah, so we had that. And then I had a small New York screening here. Actually, an old teacher of mine from film school teaches now down at the Brooklyn College for film and video. And he invited me to come and like talk to his class. And so we actually ended up kind of moving it to like an after like evening kind of thing. And about 40 or 50 people came out for that. And it was cool because what we were talking about there is we watched the film and then we talked about how it was made, which had a lot to do with talking about Kickstarter, which the film students there, you know, who are going to be out there making their first films as professionals in the next year or two. That's what the number one thing, I think, when it boils down to filmmaking, is the cost of it.
Yeah.
People tend to think it's so easy. This day and age, it's easier with digital technology to make a movie, but there's still so many costs that are hidden in the process, and every single penny that you raise is just sucked up and into the vacuum of production before you know it. So that was cool. What I liked about that a lot is that I thought it was just going to be this kind of casual thing, and, you know, we go watch the movie and then chat with some students. Like, it ended up being about 40, 50 people, and then the old teacher of mine, he, like, introduced me at the end of the movie, and I sat down in front of this auditorium of people, and then he pulled out this fat stack of note cards, and he had done all this, like, research and, like, prep on, like, me and myself and my career, and...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I was very, like, kind of touched and blown away that he had done so much research on it. So like that was cool.
Like inside the actor studio stuff.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I was really surprised because, again, I thought it was just like, hey, let's just chat about the movie and then go get a drink. But no, it was, you know, very well thought out. The students that were there seemed to really appreciate it. And it was great. And then so what did we do anything? No, that was it. And then we had over the holidays on December 28th, my wife and I are both from Akron, Ohio. And so this is the fun. I've been trying to get a New York proper New York screening for a very long time, but it's so expensive to get a good space.
That's where you're based out of, just for listeners.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm based out of New York City. It's so expensive to get a good like space, and so I keep ending up just compromising for these smaller screenings. Because if you want to rent, you know, they have these like 50 seat theaters you can rent for like $1,500, which makes no sense because if you sell every single seat, you're not going to make your money back unless you're charging, you know, ridiculous amounts of money. However, you go to Akron, Ohio, you can book the main library, 425 seats, state of the art, brand new, like auditorium. You can rent it for like $350.
Wow.
And it's insane. You know, we broke even on the rental fee after like 30 tickets. It was great. Being from that area, I have, you know, a lot of connections. So I was able to stir up some press. We had a good like half page story in the day after Christmas newspaper that went out. Where we talked a lot about the sort of the Akron, you know, Ohio connections to the film, like me and my mom's relationship and the idea of traveling from Ohio to Florida, you mm-hmm. know, multiple times a year to go to the parks. And it was a really nice thing to have out there, and it really helped to get tickets out there. We held a little raffle actually at the screening that I thought was my wife's idea, and it was a great idea. We wanted to get some reviews, just some like kind of – you tend to see people like after a screening and, you know, whether they liked it or didn't, they usually, oh, it was good. I liked it. Okay, see you later. And then they walk away and you don't
right.
really hear what they think. So what we did is we just did this very simple thing. With a little piece of paper, you put your name, your email, and then a one-line review of the film. And so, yeah, they put their name, but they could put a fake name, they could put a fake email, whatever. And it was great. So out of 175 people, we got about 75 to maybe 80 slips returned. And they were generally positive. There were three or four. One person wanted their money back. Another person thought it was going to be something that it wasn't. But most people were, you know, definitely responded very positively to it. Which is great. It was really cool to have that little bit of feedback for everybody.
That's cool. I was actually going to get into that beyond just that screening. I want to know what kind of reactions you've been getting overall, because now all the backers of the film have seen it as well, because you've released it digitally within the past month or so, or 2 months. So what kind of feedback you've been getting, positive and negative?
Like you said, it's out now. We had 811 backers, and all of those backers have received a link to stream the film online. And from what I can tell, they're either watching it a lot or they're sharing that link, which is totally fine. Of course, they can do what they want. I would say honestly, like generally positive. What's interesting to see is that like I think the critical response from what I think of like you know newspapers and magazines has been really good. The Orlando screening, we had a guy from the Orlando Weekly come, and he wrote this really nice kind of review of the event and then the film. He had some minor issues with it, but he closed his little review by saying, "I've memorized it now because I think it's such a good quote." He said it's required viewing for jaded Disney junkies looking for a vicarious adrenaline fix.
Nice.
So that's great. Like that's a wonderful quote.
That's for the cover. You put that on the DVD.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's a little – my wife said you should just cut it down to required viewing.
Oh, now you're the whole thing.
Yeah, and just leave it like that. Yeah. So it's been nice because that's kind of important, I think, to have this sort of critical review. And then with everybody else, the people that aren't writing in newspapers and stuff, it's been generally positive. At the end of the day, my most important thing – I should probably save this statement till the end. But it's really important to me that the people that were involved in the film are happy with it. I know the people I worked with personally, like Joe and Zach, who were the cinematographers. They're really proud of it. They really enjoy it. Leonard Kinsey, I know, is very happy with it. I heard him say – I can't remember if I heard him say it or if it was written in an email somewhere. He said, like, this was the film I was waiting for. Which is a statement he made about it, which is such an interesting statement to make, I think, and very nice thing for the author to say, author of the book. And the, Dana Snyder, who is featured in the film, he's a famous voice actor. He did the voice for Master Shake on Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and he is in the film talking about the drinking around the world thing that people do at Epcot. He loves the movie too, invited me to go to this convention in Miami. I can't remember. It was in September, I think, or October. And it was great. It was the first time I was able to, like, you know, talk to the random people about the film and really build up an email list and sell some early DVDs and stuff. So that's important to me. Now, with Kickstarter backers, you have 811 people. You know, picture a theater that seats 811 people going to see a movie. It's a big theater. Most theaters you go are 300, 400, maybe 500 seats. You go to see an IMAX, maybe it's 1,000 seats.
Right.
And, you know, we've all been to a movie. You go to see Star Wars. You're going to see The Force Awakens, as every single person on Earth has already. there's going to be some people in that audience that are unhappy with the movie because they have, preconceived ideas of what they're about to see.
Right.
And so I've had some people that come back and say, this is not the movie I was expecting. This has been the biggest critique that we've received, is that I think people were expecting, and something that I think we initially pitched with the idea for the film was that it was going to be this adaptation of the book, that we were going to, like, strictly follow the book and examine things that happened in the book and see, kind of investigate things that are talked about in the book and see if we could do them. And while we do some of those things in the film definitely took on its own life when we started making it. Part of what happened was when you start saying, like, okay, top five places to get high at the park. First of all, that's already in the book, and it's also all over YouTube. If you go and, like, Google YouTube, like, high at Disney or whatever you want to do,
right,
you'll see thousands and thousands of videos of people being like, I'm going to smoke this joint and then stand in this corner and look awkward for 10 minutes. Subscribe. And it's, you know, it's there on YouTube, but it's not interesting to me as a filmmaker. It's not compelling to watch. It's the kind of a boring thing to see someone being getting stoned at Disney World, which is why the film became more of that why. It's more of that why question. Like, okay, we love Hoot Gibson. We love what he does, jumping off the rides and filming behind the scenes. But why do you do it? That's something that he would never dig into in his own videos. I think he talks about it a lot on his blog. And we kind of hear kind of sometimes a commentary on the video. But to really dig down to, like, the core of, like, why he's doing these things is something that I think is interesting. So yeah, that's the biggest complaint that we've had from people, is that they expected it to be this, you know, strict. I heard one group of people, like, watching the movie, and when my mom shows up in the first, like, minute of the movie, they were like, his mom's not in the book. Like, that's what?
Somebody said that out loud?
Yeah, like, it was, yeah, I don't, yeah, it's a very strange reaction. It's hard, and I get it. You go in expecting one thing. If you go to, like, an Italian restaurant and they bring out, General Tso's chicken, you're going to be confused because you went into an Italian restaurant. But maybe, you know, open your mind a little bit and accept what you're about to see on the screen. You know.
Well, with that, just playing devil's advocate there, once you realized that the film was kind of changing, taking a new shape, did you consider, calling it something else?
Yeah, and that's something that people have said to come back to. One of the things the guy, the journalist, the critic in Ohio who wrote up the piece about the film, is that he really said, yeah, he felt like it wasn't – he understood that there was this book and that it kind of inspired the film. But it was really more, he said the better title would be like The Dark Side of Disney Fans, like, just add that word to it.
Right, right.
Yeah. So yeah, it's an interesting thing, like, to think about, like, okay, if it's not about, to me, it still is about this dark side of Disney, as much as the book is, it's definitely a different form, a different way of telling a story, from that perspective of the dark side of Disney. But yeah, I almost want to do that, like, yeah, but like put it out there to Twitter or something. Be like, what's an alternative title that you would suggest for the film? To me, I guess what it boils down to at the very, very end of it, to put a pin in this, is that I guess it's between me and Leonard Kinsey about whether or not the film continues as this film, as The Dark Side of Disney. And as far as of right now, today, he is very happy with the movie, and I'm very happy with the movie. I think that's, hopefully at the end of the day, that's all that's important. You know, I think you should see the film. Obviously, I mean, I made it. It's the movie that I wanted to make. It's the movie that I set out to make. It maybe, shifted a little bit throughout the process, but that's what art does. You know, when you're making a movie or writing a book or recording a song or anything, it's an organic process that develops as you go along. And if I'm happy and if Leonard's happy, and if most of the people in the film are happy, and if most of the audiences that come and see it are happy, then it's a good thing.
For sure. Yeah, I just wanted to give you a forum to address that, I guess.
Sure. I appreciate it.
No problem. So, speaking of people being happy, one of the concerns during the Anaheim screening was that it was brought up during the Q&A that there was Disney spies in the audience, which... I don't think that have happened, but it really got me thinking. have you had any type of response from Disney on the film?
So after the film has been, the idea that I've been making this film has been out for a long time.
Yeah.
The film itself has been available in different forms, at screenings and online streaming versions and things like that, for a little while now. So the day after the Orlando screening, we actually it was my daughter's first birthday, and we took her to Epcot to drink around the world,
took your 1-year-old daughter
to my 1-year-old.
That's pretty dark science. That's a documentary,
right? Yeah. The idea was that we wouldn't actually drink; we would go around. Well, we had some drinks, let's be honest, but we'd go around to some of the countries, and we would, instead of drinking, we would sing the happy birthday to Margot, my daughter. We didn't get very far because, she's a 1-year-old and she gets tired. And even in a stroller, it's a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
It's very overwhelming to all these people.
Well, sure. And it was food. Big.
Yeah, definitely. And it was food and wine. So we were able to hit a bunch of like little ones that don't exist any other time of the year.
Right.
So we were like in Greece and we sang happy birthday. And then someone from the booth was like, "Opa!" at the end, which was cool. and we did a couple more. But we ended up in Mexico, which was the best one. We ended up in Mexico, and it was a lot of fun. We found a little table in the little outdoor food area across from the pavilion, and we made a little announcement to everybody in the pavilion, say, "Hey, it's my daughter's birthday. If you wouldn't mind joining us and singing happy birthday." And so the whole pavilion sang happy birthday.
Wow.
But then when it was done, this woman, this older woman, came over and she said, "You're in Mexico." And then she proceeded to sing the traditional Mexican happy birthday song in Spanish.
Wow, nice.
Which was beautiful. Yeah, it was really cool. It's actually going to be that video, because I shot a bunch of video just on my phone that day. That is going to be a little special feature on the DVD when it comes out this spring. So that'll be cool. But going back a step from that anecdote, going into the parks, it was the first time that I had been back since the film was out in all the different forms. And my mom did express a little bit of concern. She's in the film talking about scattering my grandmother's ashes. And of course, I'm in the film doing more dangerous things than that. And we both were like a little bit nervous. They're like, "Oh, what if we do get pinched? What if we do, like, what if they take us over to guest services and try to upgrade our passes?"
All right. Which is code for kick you out of the park.
Which is even better. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which in reality is even better code for just turn around and go home. Like, yeah. You can come back again. You can, just avoid the chance to get upgraded.
Right.
So yeah, but nothing happened. Nothing happened. Still, nothing's happened. We had in Orlando also at the screening. We had a lot of Disney employees out. We had one guy who worked high up in the ride development. I don't know the proper name of the part of Disney World, but he worked for the people that design rides. And actually, he was telling me about how he just came back from Shanghai and was like working on the Light Cycles ride there. Yeah, he was like very open about it. A lot of people had I had posted a picture on Facebook to promote the film earlier that day, showing my fake ID that I got made for the movie, a fake cast member ID. I had a lot of people come up at the Orlando screening with their official, IDs around their necks on their lanyards, and we did a little comparison of them. I did that with like a dozen people, and they're like, "This is good. This is a good fake ID." So yeah, like it seems to me there's like this lower level of Disney employee or management that thinks it's funny and like thinks it's hilarious that people are doing this kind of thing. Because it's like, again, it would be one thing if we were like these mean spirited individuals, but a friend of mine really summed it up well. He said, "You're just these groups. You're like part of a group of people now that are just like addicted to nostalgia. Is what it boils down to. Like mm-hmm. everyone's trying to recapture that youth that we don't have anymore. And for some people, it's through scrapbooking and I don't know what else other people do. but for people like you and me, it's about re-examining these things, revisiting these things. And when you look at the Disney parks, there's just so much." There's so much in them that you can dig up, It's a maybe lofty to say we're like archaeologists, but nostalgia addict is probably a better phrase.
Right. So I guess I figured posting the fake ID would bring up some red flags, but overall, I guess you're pretty much being ignored by by Disney as a corporation, I guess, huh?
Yeah, we've talked about it before, but that Escape from Tomorrow was a big hit at the film festivals, shot illegally with no permits in Disney. And you can go to like Walmart, or you can actually go watch it on Netflix right now. I think it's sitting on Netflix, but you can also buy a copy of it at Walmart. Disney never came after them. So we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. There's that thing, it's called the Streisand effect, is what the internet has called it. It's the idea that if you're a famous person or a famous corporate entity like Disney, to draw attention to these kind of things is actually just going to make it worse. It's going to fuel the fire more. So there was Kanye West, who famously was like, there's like a picture somebody posted of him on the internet that was just like an unflattering picture, and he like insisted it be taken down. And within 2 hours, I was going to say 24 hours, but within like 2 hours, like that photo had been like photoshopped like out the wazoo like a million times and just replastered everywhere. Like, yeah, like you can't do anything about it,
I suppose. I mean, I do know on the rules for the parks on the website, which I was reading for what kind of camera equipment you could bring in or what kind of things like that. It says that you can't use... You can't record anything for commercial use. So,
do you know what's amazing about that? The amazing thing about that is literally that rule was put into place a week after you and I were there filming stuff for the documentary.
Really?
Yeah. That was like the first time. Like, I get a lot of paranoia stuff, like kind of trickled down from Leonard when it comes to the Disney stuff.
Yeah.
And I tend to take it with a grain of salt. But that was the first time that I was like, wait a second, like. This is weird that they like. I remember seeing like somebody posted on Facebook like, "Oh, updated terms of service to your Disney park ticket," and there were a bunch of different things, and that was one of them was, commercial footage, not allowed, blah blah blah, and it was literally like I could go back and show you like the date I bought the tickets compared to like the date that those new laws went in, or new rules went in.
Disney law.
Yeah, right. Some guy comes out with like a scroll and reads it. So that was weird. That was like the only like super weird. I was like, that is strange. Like are they watching me? Like they know what I'm doing and they put that in so I can't go back ever again.
When you shot with me, I was like the last thing that you shot.
Yeah, we went out that night to see Christopher Cross with Logan. That was it. Yeah.
So yeah, that was the next day. They're like, no more.
Yeah, very very strange. It's very ominous. And even that day, like going to film Christopher Cross, like the guy who's like checking bags opened my friend Joe's bag. Who and Joe had like this, you know, a camera with like four lenses and a shoulder mount and mics and all this stuff. And he like looked in the bag and then like shut the bag and was like, have a magical day. Like, and didn't say a single word.
Well, that was the next day. They were all over the place. But
yeah, so strange.
But I just bring that up because to say it does. I mean, no matter when you shot it, that, you know, that that is something that they could.
Yeah, well, for sure. Yeah. They should. Yeah, you're right. 100% they could come back down and be like, you know, slap it. And of course, I don't have the legal fees to you know, counter Disney and their, you know, huge world corporation. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. It's exciting. It could be, you know, it could become another chapter of the film.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Have you heard of any other things that were shot in the park since you've kind of been out there saying that you did it?
There was another Kickstarter that was done for a film that somebody, I think they just wrapped. We actually showed the trailer for it at the Orlando screening. They contacted me and said, can you show the trailer for our film? It's not coming out till 2017, but it's called The Further Adventures of Walt's Frozen Head.
Oh, yeah, yes. I've had them on the show, actually.
Oh, there you go. That's right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So they, I met one of the guys that they made that. And so, yeah, they shot a lot of stuff in the park without permit after, I think, the new rules went into effect. So, oof.
Mm-mm. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But that's it. As far as, I mean, all the vloggers that are out there too, doing it every day. Like, you know, there's so many people, and people like it's that YouTube thing. YouTube has made it a totally different world. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's a totally different world now because that kind of stuff makes money. Like, those people are making money, and if they're making money, then Google's making money off of it. And that is technically breaking the rules of you know, Disney World, the laws of Disney World.
Because you can monetize on your YouTube channel. Yes.
Yeah. There's all these, it's so many weird gray areas. There was somewhere on a video game podcast I listened to, they were talking about how like even like 5 years ago, Nintendo was so big about like just cracking down on everything. Like if you were posted like footage from a Pokemon game on YouTube, they would be like, no, banned, you're canceled. Like your YouTube account is blocked and you can't do this. And then it slowly became a thing where it just became too much. It became too much for them to do all the time, to block these people, to ban these people, to send legal action on these people. And now we live in a world where there's the Twitch plays Pokemon phenomena that happened where Twitch was basically entering people on Twitch could go to this stream and enter comments in the thread of a person streaming the original Pokemon game. And based on those comments, it was operating a controller that then played the game. And it was like over a month, like it was just this community of people, like it based on their comments, you know, playing the game and throughout a period of a month or maybe even longer, they actually beat the game through this weird thing. And it became a huge thing for Twitch actually, because people like talked about it a lot. And Twitch, if you don't know, is for streaming video games live while you're playing them. And then Twitch like was bought by Amazon and is now this huge thing that their whole thing is about making money by people live streaming video games, which is something, including Nintendo games, which is something that 5 years ago Nintendo and many other companies were like cracking down on to keep it off the internet.
Yeah, I guess the overall thing, I think a lot of corporations are really understanding that this really is free advertising. You know, and the pennies that maybe a YouTube channel, not pennies, but I mean, compared to the amount of money that you know, let's just take Disney back, that Disney makes.
Oh, yeah, it takes the amount of money that Star Wars makes. Like, they just made $1 billion off of, like, in 2 weeks off of Force Awakens. And I think they're going to be okay if a tiny documentary comes out. this is something I said at the Orlando screening that actually blew my mind, because I met a guy at the Orlando screening who does a I talked to him on Facebook. A bit here and there. He does the Disney Avenue Facebook page and podcast. And he actually moved to Celebration, Florida, after watching my last documentary, The Bubble, which is about the town of Disney, the Disney-built town of Celebration, Florida.
Wow.
He was persuaded by the film to move to Celebration and now lives there. And I was like, wow, that's, you know, crazy, because people said the same thing about The Bubble, like, you're worried Disney's going to come after you. And if you've seen the movie, you realize, no, why would they? There's no reason to But if anything, like the people of the Celebration Chamber of Commerce or whatever should, you know, buy the film for advertising purposes and get people moving in there. Same thing with Dark Side of Disney. When I went to L.A., I took friends of mine who lived in L.A. but had never been to a Disney park. My friend came and shot some stuff with me at the park and was just expecting to go and like film some stuff and we could hang out. But he fell in love with the park. Like he and his girlfriend both like had never been there, fell in love with it. Next time I talked to him, like a week later, they had bought their annual passes and they live in L.A. They go to Anaheim whenever they have a free like moment. So they're like, oh, it's 4 o'clock. We could get there by 5 and,
right on, right on.
You know, be there. Yeah, they're going. They go all the time. This is a guy I've known forever, since like middle school. I've known this guy. They came to the Anaheim screening and they had already had their passes by that time and they go all the time. When it was actually their idea, I'm sorry. We had planned the Orlando screening and when we were in Anaheim, they had so much fun meeting all of these like Disney Fringe community members, and going to the parks and everything and sharing their stories of going to the parks that they made their business to come to the Orlando screening just so they could go to Walt Disney World. And they came out and my friend who I'd known for 20 years, it's like I had never seen him before because he was decked head to toe. He had like Disney shorts, like a Disney, like, you know, shirt, Walt Disney World hat, it little like Mickey Mouse backpack. And I was just like, you are totally brainwashed now. And he's like, no, I'm not brainwashed. I just let, you know, one day I had to buy a pair of shorts cause I was wearing jeans and it was too hot. And
so right. Of course.
And I spilled an icy on my shirt. So I had to get a new one. Like, yeah. So again, yeah, people see something, like the Dark Side of Disney or participate in a film like the Dark Side of Disney and it makes them lifelong park enthusiasts, I guess.
Yeah, there really isn't too much of a negative thing. I mean, obviously, drug use, which there really isn't, that I recall, any drug use that takes place inside the parks.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, the magic of editing. But the way the film looks is it's mainly done in a hotel room, and then you know, go to the park. You know, and depending on what state you're in, people would say, you know, if you're in Colorado or Oregon or here in New York, it just became a law for medicinal marijuana, same as it is in California.
Yeah, I mean, it's marijuana, by the way. When you say drugs, it makes it sound like
it is 100% just weed. But yeah, like that's, I mean, not to call anybody out, but when I hung out with a certain group of ladies when we went to Disneyland, you know, one or two of them may have been smoking a bowl, but it's medicinal. It was a legal thing you could do. It's just the same as having a glass of scotch to gently calm your nerves after a long day. So yeah, I mean, it's illegal. Yes, it is illegal in the state of Florida, but it's not the craziest thing that happens in those parks. That's for sure.
All right, cool. So the backers have seen it. People that attend the screenings. What about other people that can't make it to these screenings and didn't back? When can they get a DVD or any other? Basically, when's the DVD coming out? First question. And the second one, what's the plan for wide release?
Well, the best way to stay in touch with all of it, to make sure, you know, if you're listening now and you want to see this movie, is to go to dsoddoc.com. That's DSOD, like Dark Side of Disney. doc.com, and they can subscribe to the email newsletter there that comes out. We try to do it once a month, keeps people in the loop. And if you sign up there, you'll find out when screenings are coming, possibly to your town. We've had a couple screenings happen because people have emailed me and said, like, I live here. I know a guy who runs a theater. I could set you up. You know, we're doing a screening anyways, go to the website, dsoddoc.com, and sign up for updates. We're probably going to be releasing DVDs at the end of April, beginning of May, I think is what's going to happen.
Okay.
We have a screening, the end of January, on January, 30th, at Aeronauts Brewing Company in Boston, Massachusetts. It's a 6 p.m. screening. It's totally free because the venue does free movies every Saturday. And one of our cinematographers for the film, Zach Lennon-Simon, now lives up there. It actually lives like two blocks from the brewery. And he made a connection with the guy at the brewery and said, hey, I helped to make this movie. And so we're going to be doing it there. It's going to be great. Sadly, my wife and I were going to go, but we can't make it now. Something came up. But if you're in the Boston area and you go, you can meet Zach in person. And as someone who has met Zach, James, I think you'll agree that he's a fun guy to hang out with.
Yes.
he's a little neurotic, but he's very fun and very nice guy. So yeah, January 30th is that. We just booked a Saturday, March 4th screening in Nashville, Tennessee at Vanderbilt University. It's going to be a 7 p.m. screening. And that one, I think, is $10 is what it's going to be. My wife and I will be there. And it should be a really good screening, good opportunity. And we're finalizing plans for a Baltimore screening, a New Orleans screening, and a Pittsburgh screening. All of those are up in the air right now, but are definitely happening in the next 2 or 3 months. And you should definitely sign up for those email updates at dsoddoc.com so you can stay in the loop on all things Dark Side.
Oh, wow. What a pitch.
Yeah.
Great. And do you have any those are for the non-backers. Do you have any messages for any backers that are listening? That
Oh, yeah. I wanted to talk about – so I went to this convention in Miami after this very successful screening in Anaheim that almost everybody in the movie came out to, including Dana Snyder, who I mentioned before. Dana Snyder, after seeing the movie, said, you have to come to this convention in Miami. There's actually three of them every year. There's Animate Miami that happens in September. There is the Magic City Comic Con, which is happening this weekend in Miami. And then there's the Florida Supercon, which happens in June or July. And each one kind of grows to be a bigger and bigger event. The one that I went to, Animate Miami, is the smallest one. But Dana said, you have to come. You have to sell your DVDs. You have to meet these people. You have to talk to people. And, you know, because he said, I love the movie. They're going to love the movie. It's going to be great. And so I was amazed. I was absolutely amazed at this experience because I thought it was going to be like, whatever. I'd be maybe sitting next to Dana, like sharing his booth or whatever. And but I thought, okay, you know, I'll go. And I was lucky to have some points. So I got a free, you know, airfare. And then my mom, my sweet, sweet mom, got me a room at the hotel. So it was kind of a free trip, but I bought a bunch of DVDs to sell at the convention because we needed to make some money to make it worth it.
Right.
But I don't know what I expected. I go into this convention day one, and am I in a booth with Dana Snyder? I have my own like booth right next to him with like a banner with my name on it, like pictures of me that they like just kind of stole off the internet.
Oh wow, they hooked you up there. Nice.
Yeah, I was like, okay. And I was like, I guess it's nice to have friends like Dana Snyder and Guy Hutchinson.
What up,
I found
Guy?
Out later actually after Dana invited me, and I feel bad. I should have said Guy Hutchinson's name earlier. After Dana invited me and everything, it turned out there was actually Guy who like was responsible for it all. Like he was the one that was like, that dude is a good dude. Let's get Philip Swift in here and make this happen. And if you don't know Guy Hutchinson, go check out Drunk on Disney or any of the like 25 panels he's doing this weekend at the Magic City Comic Con in Miami. He is a prolific dude at a convention. So long story short, thanks to Guy and Dana, I met an artist named Josie Devora, who runs a website called roosterpop.com. And he does this amazing, like, to call it fan art would be, to put it down, because it's like art inspired by pop culture things, everything from Adventure Time to Beetlejuice. He does these amazing fan drawings and these in this very unique style that is just adorable and wonderful. And he does all this stuff for Drunk on Disney, some stuff for their website, but mainly stuff for what they do at these conventions. In fact, they had a Drunk on Disney special like VIP party, and it was around Halloween time. So that's when it was. It was at the end of October. Now I can finally figure out when that convention happened that I went to. And he made these Drunk on Disney Ouija boards. They were like special, like limited edition, only for people that came to the convention and bought a ticket to the special VIP event.
Awesome.
And then they had little shot glasses as the little, you know, like the thing you're supposed to put on the Ouija board to move around. And it was awesome. And I was just blown away by this guy, super talented, but also like the nicest guy I've ever met, just a super nice guy. And we kind of hung out the whole weekend. He and I, we were like, I would go visit his booth and he'd come visit my booth. And we just chatted a lot and really connected. And then I was thinking about the design of the Dark Side of Disney DVD cover and the website and the poster that we had made. And I was okay with it, but it was I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not an artist in that right. And so I started talking to him about the idea of redesigning everything for the Dark Side of Disney for the release of the film. And so what he's doing, to give a little hint and preview, part of the reason why I'm explaining all this now, specifically when you asked about backers, is because a lot of my backers are still owed DVDs. I think it's like 250 of the backers are owed DVDs. And I've had a couple of people email me and be like, where's my damn DVD? Well, we're waiting until we get the redesign done so that we can get a nice, proper, official Dark Side of Disney DVD made instead of the ones that I've been making that are, this poor graphic design job. And I think it's going to be worth the wait because the idea that we came up with is that he does this very great, like, you know, cartoony style, very, you know, adorable, wonderful style, that very unique. But he's going to design the new cover and poster to look like one of the Disney films from the 90s, you know, like those white plastic cases that was.
Oh,
you know,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's going to look like that. And it's going to have like the emblem plate, like you saw on like the Lion King DVD or the Mulan DVD. The plate is going to be there at the top with the, you know, Dark Side of Disney. And then the image is going to be this very cartoony, like, you know, sweet image of the Cinderella castle, but around the castle, different people from the film are going to be doing different things that they're known for from the movie. So my mom, there's going to be like a little cartoony version of my mom, like dumping, you know, ashes into the moat. There's going to be Dana Snyder, like with a cocktail, like, you know, having a good time.
Are you telling me there's going to be a cartoon version of me on the cover of this?
There's going to be a cartoon version of you. So then I picture that, it'd be you being kind of creepy, like in the bushes, like, but with like a microphone, like you'd be like, you have a microphone, like leaning out of bushes, and, like a Creepy Kingdom kind of style. You can kind of picture it now in your head, hopefully. Yeah, you see like a little cartoony like Leonard Kinsey like sneaking into like a cast member door. And
Roxy's gonna love this, by the way.
Roxy of course will be just like, you know, like I said, like her bright shiny self, probably, like, you know, maybe kicking like one of the actual like Disney princesses out of the way to like get in somebody else's photo. Yeah, it's going to be cool. So I think it's going to be well worth the wait. His art is great. Josie DeVore knows what he's doing.
And that's going to be a poster as well, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's going to be a poster that we're going to be able to sell on the website, and it's going to be the new DVD cover and everything. It's going to be everything. It's going to be awesome. It's going to give it a really unique style, too. I think people now – the image that we have is kind of dark and ominous, and the only thing that really pops is like the title that's on the poster, and then you see it and you're like, what is this about? But now we're going to do this kind of, I think, homage to this classic Disney style that I think will really, really impress people, and hopefully they'll enjoy it.
All right, awesome. Well, one more thing I got to ask you before I let you out of here is
because you have me captured in this cage.
Yes, before I let you out of this cage, allow you to go on with your life. What's next, actually? What is your next project? I don't know if you're ready to announce that or if there's something they're thinking of.
I really wanted to go to the Magic City Comic Con because I got the convention bug after going to this one in October. For as nerdy as I am, I'm a super nerd. I had never been to a proper convention.
It's a thing.
Crazy, right?
It's addicting too.
and I loved it. Everybody I met was like, it was so great and so nice and so wonderful, and like it was just a really fun time. And Magic City, Comic-Con is this weekend in Miami, and I was invited to come back, and I pitched these ideas for these panels I was going to do, and, you know, have another booth and everything. It just didn't work out, which is fine. The part of what bums me out is that I had talked with Hoot Gibson about on my way home, swinging by his home near Orlando to spend some time with him, because we had a little announcement about it at the Anaheim screening that Hoot Gibson is in the early stages of attempting to build his own small theme park on his land. Leonard Kinsey announced that during the Q&A via text message from Hoot. And then Hoot and I at the Orlando screening, we talked about it some more, and he's definitely still going. He showed me actually an early mock-up of what the land would look like. It was sort of done as like almost what when you get those maps at the Magic Kingdom or whatever. It was done up like that. And it's a really cool, unique idea that he has. And so my hope was that I was going to go to this convention and then I'd spend some time checking out the land and doing maybe some preliminary interviews with Hoot to get that process going. But then plans changed and then the holidays came up and everything got so busy. And while I know it's sunny where you are and sunny in Florida, here in New York, we're currently dealing with like 13 degree weather. And we all are like affected by the seasonal, like, you know, depression that happens when you step outside and get smacked in the face with cold.
Well, I will say, I mean, the listeners know I recently moved to Southern California. It has been not nice weather here during the winter.
What do you mean? What do you mean by not nice?
No, I just moved from New Jersey, so I'm not dealing with 13 degrees anymore, but I've been freezing out here. We just had crazy rainstorms, which included flooding. I mean,
that's true. Yeah, the flooding is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, not to talk about weather on podcasts, but it's not Florida. That's all I'm going to say. It is like
sure.
It's like an East Coast like November, November.
Yeah.
Like that's what's going on here. So that's
it's annoying.
It's not shorts and flip flop weather over here. So, but anyways.
So Hoot and I we were talking for a bit there, but then we got caught up in the holiday times and right. Now it's winter time, but right now I'm going to try to get this movie together and out the door. It's been doing a lot of legwork, reaching out to a lot of different outlets, blogs and newspapers and magazines, both domestically and internationally, to try to get the most positive outreach we can when the film's released in April or May. Once that's all done and wrapped up, I'm going to spend some time in Florida, whether Hoot Gibson wants me to or not, down there talking to him about the process of making his own park. So, one of the best things I think we've seen with the film, with The Dark Side of Disney, is that even if there are people out there who like are really upset about like its focus and its shift in tone or whatever it is that people are mad about, I think resoundingly everybody that sees the film walks away with a memory of the Hoot Gibson segment. Like I think it's the strongest segment by, hands down. I think it's the most relatable segment. I think it's just a wonderful intro to a wonderful guy who has done some amazingly ridiculous things in his life. And I definitely think he's going to be, would be a great focus of a full focus of a documentary, kind of following his process, trying to build his own park.
Wow. So there it is. I don't know if you officially have said that, but now it's on the podcast. So.
yeah, it's out there now. So we'll see. And it's interesting. Part of what I want to do too is I think it'd be obviously fascinating to watch him build this, but then to also go and examine, investigate other instances where this has occurred, like where people have thought like I'm going to build my own theme park and
right.
Find these like mom and pop theme parks, which do exist, especially in Florida. Go and find these places and talk to the people that ran them or do run them and see what the successes were, see what the failures were. I think it'd be interesting to try to find other people like Hoot Gibson, also people who were like obsessed with certain rides, like Horizon, like he was with Horizons. Find other people at other theme parks. My brother-in-law grew up, his summertime job when he was a teenager was he operated this ride called the Rotor at Geauga Lake in Northeast Ohio. And there's a guy that literally during the summer would come every single day and just like ride the Rotor all day long.
Wow.
and that's a little different than what Hoot and Chief did at Epcot. But that guy's out there somewhere, like living a life where he was riding the Rotor every day. So
wow.
I can meet people like that. And I think that would make a really nice, well-rounded documentary, following Hoot as the main thread and then, examining these mom and pop parks and other upset theme park fans. Could be a cool little interesting movie.
Wow, I'm intrigued. I mean, so we'll check in a little more on that as that story develops. But for now, we're deep in Dark Side Disney documentary land, and got a bunch of screenings coming up. So people want to find you and everything. Why don't you give all your final plugs?
Yeah, the best thing to do is just go to dsoddoc.com and sign up for those email updates. We also have a Facebook page. You can go and like us there, and then you'll be up to date on things when they are connected there. That's the best thing to do. We're getting up, slowly getting like an actual like Dark Side of Disney documentary Twitter and Instagram account together. So we'll be ready for the launch with those things. But when we talk about like independent cinema, like it's like me and like my wife helps sometimes with the online stuff and some outreach. But that's it. Like right now, it's like a lonely thing. Like I had a lot of help in the beginning, but now it's just this kind of like, you know, lonely existence trying to like do all of this work that usually is done by a team of people on film release stuff. So
sure,
yeah, definitely. So yeah, dsoddoc.com. Would be the best place for people to go.
Alrighty. Well, thanks for coming on the show again, Philip.
Yeah, thank you, James. Appreciate it.
If you, the listener, would like to contact us here at Creepy Kingdom, the easiest way to do so is by emailing creepykingdom@gmail.com. And if you would like to check out any of our other podcasts that we produced here at Monster Movie Media, such as Diva James, the Podcast Podcast, Curvy Cutie Chat, and Roxy's World, your one-stop shop is Monster Movie Media. And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pics, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest, just go to creepykingdom.com. And if you want to help us out by supporting what we do here, the easiest way to do so is by going to patreon.com/creepykingdom. Well, until next time,
keep it creepy.
I have to go now. It is midnight. Pleasant dreams. Ha 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 ha